This episode of the Coin Week podcast is brought to you by PCGS. PCGS, the standard in the rare coin industry. Questions surrounding legal tender and collector coins. It's a complicated topic. In light of recent reporting out of the UK involving the failed redemption of legal tender 100-pound collector coins, we contacted our friend Brett Evans, former editor of Canadian Coin News, to ask if similar issues face collectors of collector coins struck by the Royal Canadian Mint. In this podcast, Brett shares his perspective as we continue to dig deep into this serious issue that has the potential to upturn the modern commemorative coin market.
I'm talking to Brett from Canadian Coin News. He's a former editor, he's a contributor now. And I wanted to talk to you today real quick about recent reporting that Coin Week did about the Royal Mint in the UK. Now, I know Canada and is not the UK, but I think you might have some interesting insights on it yourself. Apparently, the Royal Mint sells collector coins. They produce a lot, not as much as the RCM, but they produce a lot. And these are supposed to be legal tender coins of the United Kingdom. And they've been doing a promotion of where they strike collector coins at 20 pounds, 50 pounds, and 100 pounds denominations, and they sell them at face value, so essentially on par. And I think the marketing model is, hey, these are low risk. You can get a beautiful collector coin in silver for the same price as the actual regular money you'd be spending to buy it. So this is about a lot of excitement, and one particular individual, and he might not be alone, decided he was going to use this opportunity to buy a lot of them. He bought 293, and he bought it to rack up some credit card miles. Time to go pay his bill, so he goes to the deposit in his bank. He's told no, they're collectibles, not money. And because of this, he's sort of... he was out of quandary, what to do, and he ended up disposing them at other banks, but ultimately the government, the Royal Mint, sent letters to the banks telling them not to accept these things, citing their legal tender law. What do you think about that?
Well, I was completely shocked. I mean, because essentially what they're doing is they're leaving everyone flapping in the wind. They're saying, well, they're legal tender, but good luck getting any, getting your money back from them. I mean, I appreciate that legal tender doesn't mean you can just walk into a bank and say, here's a $20. In the case of Canadian, we have an extensive series of these that are sold for face value, right? So, unlike a regular, non-significant legal tender coin where it's sold at several multiples of face value, people pay $20 for it and they think they can get their $20 back by going to the bank. Of course, that's kind of redemption. And quite often you'll find the bank says, well, we're not in the business of turning $20 coins into $20 notes. And that's one problem. But, the idea that when you buy it and you hear the word legal tender, you think somehow if you need that money, you can get it back. And they've just pulled the rug from underneath those people. And that really kind of just, it's stunning to me. It's short-sighted at best.
Well, let me ask you a question, though. You said that, they're not in the business of redemption, but let's say you go to your bank in Canada and you have a $20 note and you want $20 in loonies. I mean, they're going to do that for you, aren't they?
As a courtesy, technically. I mean, they actually had a case a number of years ago where they found banks were charging to do that, and there was such a hue and cry, they stopped.
Right, but you could go both ways, though. I mean, typically, you said as a courtesy, but they will give you, if you take a roll of coins, they'll deposit it in your bank, wouldn't they?
Well, depositing and cashing are two different things. I mean, legal tender is complex because legal tender implies that there's a debt.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a transaction going on. And under Canadian law, it gets incredibly complicated again because the buyer and seller are kind of allowed to determine the method of payment. And a fact of Canadian law says that the person selling does not have to accept money, even if it's legal tender, if he is suspicious or unfamiliar with it. In other words, if there's any doubt in his mind.
Okay, so now, let's play out the scenario. I owe you like $500, and we just can't sort it out. So we go to court over it, and I'm like, you know what, Brett, I'm gonna pay you back, but you're getting all these $20 for $20 Superman coins, and you're just gonna have to live with that.
You would be wrong. You would be wrong, because under Canadian law, $20 coin is only legal tender in units of one.
Wow.
Okay, so the Currency Act, which defines legal tender and a lot of other things, it also specifies the number of coins which constitute a legal tender. So
right.
The classic case of someone paying their taxes all in 1 cent or 5 cent coins. In Canada, technically, if I owe you a dollar and I offer you 100, you know, they'd be old now, but if I offered you 100 pennies, or if I owed you $100 and offered you 100 loons, I'm not offering you a legal tender.
All right. Well, here's where the UK law being a little bit different.
Very much so, yeah.
If you go to the Royal Mint website, again, they don't set the law, but just the Mint, but they specify that legal tender for 20-pound coins, 50-pound coins, and 100-pound coins is unlimited. And keep in mind that those are collector coins. They don't make those for circulation. So they don't have a law saying that these are limited legal tender in any way. So I would imagine we have our dispute in the UK. I go and try to use these Buckingham Palace 100-pound coins. You should be compelled to take them in court.
You probably could, and there may even be a redemption process in place. I mean, in Canada, we went through this initially way back in the 90s. This first came to the forefront when an American investor loaded up a suitcase full of 1972 Montreal Olympic commemoratives.
Mm.
Now, these were unique because they actually, the melt value was very close to face, but below it. But he bought them in the United States where they really weren't money. They were silver, right? So he bought them for about $3 an ounce, and he took them up to here. And of course, these 1 ounce coins had a $5 face value. And he was trying to get his money back for them, and some of them had $10 and they were a little heavier. So he had coins where actually the face value was, again, the legal tender status, right? And the problem he had was, first off, Montreal Olympic coins are even different again because they weren't struck under the authority of the Currency Act. They were struck under the authority of the Olympic Act, which made them legal tender in units of two. But he ran these things up. He went to the Mint. And again, the Mint in Canada is a Crown corporation. It means it's technically a government owned by the government, or a company owned by the government. And they make the money for the Minister of Finance. So they say, well, once we make them, once they go in the circulation loop, they're not our problem anymore. Once they get out, they're the Minister of Finance. They're his coins because he got the seigniorage on them. Of course,
right.
Minister of Finance doesn't take visitors. But they went from the Mint, they went to the Bank of Canada, the Royal Bank of Canada, thinking, you know, it's the Royal Bank, it's the Queen's Bank, they'll honor it. And of course, the Royal Bank just happens to be the name of the bank, it's a privately owned bank. They sent to the Bank of Canada. The Bank of Canada said, I'm sorry, we only deal with banknotes. And these guys ended up going home empty-handed because they couldn't cash them in.
Yeah.
Now, what came up as a result of that was that the Royal Canadian Mint began to implement a redemption program through the banking system, where banks, or even directly through them, where they will buy these back for face value less the cost of shipping. It began to the banks were at one time a partner, and the banks got out of it, and then the banks are back into it now. In the case of our face value coins in Canada, I know that the Royal Canadian Mint will promise you will promise to reimburse the bank for the full cost. But here's the problem, though. You show up at the bank with your 20 for 20 beaver coin, and you try and give it to the cashier and say, I want to deposit this in my account, and she's never seen it before. And she calls the manager, and he can't remember the memo he saw 2 years ago. And they still end up sending people home.
These are collector coins, and every country treats these things differently. I've learned. But it seems to me that the governments that issue these things are really going out of their way not to treat them like coins and not to treat them like money. And so why the artifice? Why stamp denominations on these things arbitrarily if no one ever intends them to, well, the government that issues them never intends to hold up their end of the bargain on?
Oh, I agree with you completely, you know, that whoever issues these things has to stand behind them. And ultimately, they're issued in the name of the government. I'm not sure about the nuances of the British system. I'm not sure exactly how their system works, you know, but, you know, the system here is basically the Royal Canadian Mint sells, produces that coin, and they manage the coin distribution system. Once it leaves the Mint, though, again, it's the Minister of Finance's responsibility, and they don't want to be bothered. I mean, the truth is, everyone wants to sell this stuff, right? Everyone wants to make money on it, and nobody wants to, you know, to have to pay the piper when it comes time to do it.
Right, so they don't want to make it a two-way market. They just want to sort of make sure, hey, we can call whatever we want because we have the authority to do it. We'll release it into the wild.
They make money hand over fist. Yeah.
You know,
in most collector coins, this isn't a problem. I mean, let's face it. If you buy most, I'm so familiar with Canadian coins, but most Canadian $20 collectible coins, the non-significant tender, are sold for well above $20, and they're sold for well above face value. So the odds, the number of people who are likely to turn around and try and cash in their $10 and $20 silver coins and expect to get $10 or $20 for it are few and far between. You can take these coins and you can take them to a coin dealer. You might not get what you paid for them, but you'll get more than face.
Well, let's talk about the Canadian coins that are sold at face value.
Well, these are the problems because the dealers have to discount them, right?
Yeah, so is that what's happening? I mean, if you buy a 20 for 20 Canadian coin and the demand for it kind of tapers off after a year or two, and you go to a dealer to try to sell it, they can't pay a premium for it or face.
I mean, the best the dealer is going to get is face value. The very, very best he can do is give you, if you walk in with a $20 coin you're selling in, the best he can do is give you $20, unless it happens to be one of the ones where there's a secondary market. There's a couple of them where there's a bit of demand, right? But we're going to assume that the secondary market, but that's the gamble aspect. We're going to assume the secondary market may not be that strong for the guy. So the dealer can give you, if the dealer gives you $20, the best he can do is get his $20 back. So what's the percentage for the dealer? He's in business, right?
Right.
Yeah. And we can't expect our local coin dealer to give you $20 and then to give it, you know, cash it in for $20 and still stay in business because no one's paying his bills that way.
Right.
So the dealer has to kind of take a little bit off that because the very best you can possibly do is get the $20 less the cost of shipping. Now, as I said, in this case, I know the Royal Canadian Mint did put a system in place. And I know a couple of years ago when this issue came up, they did recirculate that memo to the banks saying we'll reimburse you for these things. But again, the problem being that the individual teller, the individual manager isn't familiar with them. And of course, and when they see it, they don't know what to do with it. It doesn't fit into the coin handling system. And this would be true of the UK and of the United States. The entire coin handling system is machine run.
Right.
And these
right.
things are freaks. The machines spit them out. So no one knows how to handle these things. They're unusual. The collector ends up quite often, the person who owns the coin ends up struggling to get their face value back. They go to the bank and they got to fight the bank. Even where the system's in place, they got to fight the bank. If you're in England, the bank says, I'm sorry. Goodbye.
Well, why is it necessary to stamp denominations on these things? Because the issuing government's not even treating them like coins. They're certainly not designing them as if they're coins. There's no real monetary consideration other than, you know, the statutory requirement that the monarch is on the obverse. There's nothing really else money-related about it. Why don't they just create art medals and things and just charge whatever they want for them?
Why do I think they do it? I don't speak for the mints, but I've been observing this industry long enough to know that when you produce a metal, the demand is so much lower.
Right.
When we look into this series, when you see people collecting coins, they will, there's a cachet of respectability and a cachet of sanction that comes with, in the case of our coins, having the monarch on it, of course, but also, having that dollar value. People believe psychologically, right, that there's a basement value to that coin, which is face value. Now, and it is in the case of again the Canadian the 20 for 20s, which are the very common silver series. Chances are that $20 is going to be the most that coin is going to be worth. There'll be a little peak sometimes when they first come out if people are demanding them. They don't know what the numismatic value of that item is going to be down the road. Right? Because, I remind people coins have three values, right? The melt value, the collector value, and the face value. And it'll always go, for whichever one of those is highest. But you can't guarantee the non-signaling because you don't know what the demand's going to be. You don't know what's going to happen, 5 years down the road. What looks like a good speculative investment now might not plan out.
And you don't even know at this point if the face value is going to hold up.
No. So you take a shot at it. So when you buy these 20 for 20s, as I said, you're really thinking, what have I got to lose? Especially if you're, the average Canadian can buy this thing, it's free shipping. He thinks he has no risk to do it. Now, in reality, what he's doing is he's being captured by the Royal Canadian Mint. The words the Mint uses in its own reports to describe these programs are customer acquisition programs. So they're gobbling up the customer's name, but they know that if they ran an ad, if they sent out, if they ran a TV ad, that they were pushing, Bugs Bunny for a long time, right? On a 20 for 20, I think it was 20 for 20, but
yes, yeah.
They were pushing Bugs Bunny on the coin and they were advertising on television. And if it had said collect this metal that has Bugs Bunny on it, a lot less people would be excited.
Well, they got to figure out a way that they got to hold up their end of the bargain and have a way for people to redeem them. Either that or make the denomination so unbelievably low for the face value that nobody would ever be in that position, because otherwise it's not a coin, in my opinion.
Well, again, the situation in Canada is that way. I really want to, if I have to kind of walk, if there's a takeaway from this, it's that this is not the situation in Britain is not the situation in Canada. It may be difficult to get your money back from Canada, but you generally can. People do have problems, and I used to get a lot of calls from people. They go to the bank and they'd end up getting frustrated. But generally, if you went back and got the information and took it back to the, it's possible to get that. It's not easy, but it's not impossible to do it. You may have to go to four or five banks to find someone. You may have to contact someone to get a copy of a memorandum to show someone. There might be a lot more work to do it. But it's not impossible. Unlike in Britain, where I don't know what you would do. Those guys are really, that's the contrast I see between Canada and Britain.
Well, very interesting. Yeah. It's always interesting talking to you about community coins and issues surrounding it, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about it.
Okay, great. Well, luck anytime.
And that does it for this episode of the Coin Week podcast. We will be back with more insightful commentary and informative numismatic stories. If you like the podcast, please share it with your friends. And don't forget, you can download our growing library of episodes for free from the iTunes Store. For CoinWeek, I'm Editor Charles Morgan, signing off. Happy collecting.